Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. Hello, Body. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm excited. And you know why. Two reasons. I've got a book coming out shortly, but our guest today is one I've been really looking forward to. So we'll do the intros, my man.
Yeah, this one's been an interesting one. I would have loved to have him on heaps earlier, but as he's one of my best mates, if not my best mate, it was one of those things that I wasn't sure how to bring him in. But I'm so glad that we've got him now. Of course, we are talking of a man that was born in Jackson, Mississippi, attended Boise State University. He came out to Australia and actually ended up, and I think it back then was called the CBA, but he actually ended up starting with the Gippsland Lakers. And then he went on to an illustrious NBL career, playing 17 years for a number of teams, which was the East Side Spectres, the West Side Saints, Southeast Melbourne Magic, the Sydney Kings, the Mighty Boys, the West Sydney Razorbacks as well. He is the only player to ever have his number 32 retired, or the first player, I should say, retired for the West Sydney Razorbacks. And of course, he is extremely well known when he won his 1992 NBL Championships for the Southeast Melbourne Magic, where he was given the trophy by his great mate, David Stern. And and he tells me every day how it was his great mate. And of course, we are talking to none other, as I said, my best mate. Can I just say, NBL Grand Finalist in 92, best six man in 1999, and just one of the greats of Australian basketball, and a better bloke as well. Of course, none other than Bruce Buffy Bolden. Hello, mate.
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. Man, that's the intro to live up to, and some memories that instantly take me back. But it's good to be on the show talking to you and Body. I've listened to quite a bit of episodes and enjoy it. Love hearing the interviews from those that that played in the game, those that are currently in the game, obviously those that have an impact on this game. That's been good to me from day one when I arrived to, and even today as I'm speaking to you guys. So glad to be here chatting with you.
Bruce, it's really good to have you on, because I feel you fall into that category of NBL star that we tend to forget about. Like if the conversation comes up, it's Cal Bruton gets remembered, and James Crawford and Leroy Loggins, but guys like yourself and Mark Davis, Benny Lewis, Rocky Smith, tend to be sort of like in the shadows a little bit, which I think is wrong. Just as Brad read out your career there, it's a fantastic career. So what I'm curious about is, are you at the moment, are you actively involved in basketball in any way? Are you coaching, or do you follow the NBL still?
I still follow the NBL. I still love the game, and I still watch watch the teams, watch the imports that are arriving. Watch the Australians that are, playing NBL, that are coming through, that are part of the next generation. Like seeing someone like Dellavedova come back. Might be only momentarily to play in the NBL and pass on abundance of his skills and knowledge to those not only on Melbourne United, but around the league. So. Still involved. I run my own coaching business that's, trying to help the next generation of Australian talent come through. That passion is still very strong in me about the game.
So how did you get into the game, Bruce? Like, how did that come to you way back, well before Boise State? Like, how did you discover basketball? Did you have siblings that played, or parents, or was it, because you got a big, strong build, you could have played any sport?
Yeah, you know what? I when I was little, I played all different types of sports, as you do.
Yep.
Back in those days where neighborhoods was full of kids, running up and down the neighborhood, skateboards, riding their bikes, and going down to the park and playing flag football, playing, NFL, which is gridiron.
Yep.
It just was played all the sports. And I guess for me, I got the conversation from a cousin of mine who noticed that I was starting to grow.
Right.
And, particularly back then, you know, basketball was about, well, if you're tall, you mm-hmm. can play basketball. You'll excel yes. in the NBA. And you know, he put that in my mind. He said, hey, you know, you're growing, you're tall. If you, you know, stop, you know, messing around with those other sports and focus on basketball, you know, you could play in the NBA. You know, that really planted a seed in my yeah. mind, because I hadn't Absolutely. Heard that before. You know, my parents were very supportive. They were just doing the best they possibly could, you know, two hardworking parents. My dad was in the car manufacturing industry. My mother was manager at a dry cleaner. So, you know, they were our strength, provided, you know, food and guidance and love on the table.
Yep.
But in terms of that conversation about sports, that kind of left something in my mind of you could be an NBA player. That yeah. didn't happen from them, but fortunately my cousin did, and that really was the start for me, having that sort of image in my head. And at that time too, you know, watching basketball, my hero was Julius Erving, Dr. J. So to be on a court like he played was something that stuck with me from that point onwards.
Right.
Bruce, I want to go on and ask, you're at Boise State, then you came out of college and played. What brought you to Australia, which I know was in Gippsland, as I said before, but how did all that happen?
So from college, I played a year in Europe. At that time, Europe was like, you know, the next best place to go if you don't, you know, you don't play in the NBA.
Yes.
So I was realistic about my skill set. I was just a hard worker. You know, I wasn't one who had a great jump shot. I didn't have handles. You know, I wasn't an athlete.
I beg to differ, Bruce. That jump shot was pretty effective.
I think I've got about 1,200 assists and 799 are all Bruce's jump shots.
Yeah, you're wrong on the jump shot, mate, but keep going.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you're right. In college, though, I was just a rebounder. I just banged the opposition's big fellas, and my role wasn't to be a scorer. So playing a year in, or I should say a season in Norway, I got a phone call from a college teammate, Eric Bailey. I don't know if you know Eric Bailey. He played with the Melbourne Tigers under yes. Lindsay yep. back in the mid-80s. He was actually a player coach down in Gippsland. And they were looking for another import, you know, and at that time, you know, like most of those Americans back then, all we knew about Australia was koalas and kangaroos. And that's it. But the opportunity to play in Australia and play with a teammate again was something that was really appetizing. And I didn't hesitate. I said, yeah, let's do it. And that's pretty much how it started. Touching down in Australia.
So that brings me to something I just, and then Boddy, I'm going to throw to you for the next question, but I just want people to try and get in the mind of me, of how I feel about Bruce, but also Bruce the guy. I've never ever played with a guy that is more team than Bruce. And here's a guy that played in college, played with a teammate, said come to Australia. It wasn't the NBL he was going to. He was going to the second tier, even though he went on and people saw him in the ABA, in CBA, and said we've got to get him going to the NBL. But Bruce is the most. When he came to Sydney in 95, I think it was, well, that was when I started to join, this guy just took me under his wings. I can say now that he is my best mate, but he was like a dad to me when I came in. And the way he able to take me in under his wing and say, this is what you need to do. Now, I used to have to go up against Shane Heal every day at training, which you guys can imagine. And Bruce was in my ear every day. Don't let him get you. Don't give in. Go at him and go at him harder. And I just want people to understand that. And now he's doing his elite basketball training. It's all about giving back for Bruce. That's what he's about. And it's just, mate, you're just such an amazing guy to be around. And I hope it's coming across here.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess giving back is also showing appreciation of what I was given, you know, when I first got here.
Yep.
Because I tell the story about You know, obviously Eric Bailey made the phone call of me coming to play with him. But arriving at Tullamarine, I was picked up by two ladies. One name is Kay, and for the life of me, I can't remember the second one. But they picked me up from the airport. You know, I'm 23 years old. I knew nothing about life, for that matter. Very little about Australia, but was excited to eventually touch down at in Australia. We got in the car. As both of you would know, you get on Tullamarine, you start heading to the city, you start seeing these big buildings, and you get excited. So I'm thinking, yeah, great, this is Melbourne. Oh, fantastic. So we continue on driving, get on through, get past the CBD. I look back, the buildings are getting smaller and smaller. And then I said, Kay, the city is back there. Kay, where are we going? Said, Bruce, we still got another 2.5 hour drive. It's like, oh, okay. She said, yeah, we're going to the country. I'm like, okay, all right, fantastic. Well, this is that's how it is. And when I got there, I was welcomed so warm and friendly, and there were so many people wanting to help me settle in and do anything I needed to help myself settle in. For me, that was the first impression of Australia.
Right.
And so that impression is one that's lasted all the way to today. So I'm all about giving back, because my love and passion for basketball, you know, continued on all through from when I got picked up at Tullamarine all through today. And through that journey, giving back is something that is satisfying, and it's also rewarding to see, you know, juniors or even some of the NBL guys that I've you know, done some private coaching with, see them excel, see their game get to where it want to, and see that joy and satisfaction from them.
Yeah. So you're playing for the Lakers, which still sounds pretty good to me. It doesn't look too bad on the resume. Hey, I played for the Lakers. So you become, obviously you would have become aware of the NBL at some point, probably pretty quickly. And you realized, okay, I'm playing in this comp, but there's a better one. How did that transition come about that you went to Eastside? Somebody spot you, or did you speak up to someone, or how did that transition go from CBA to NBL?
So just to take it back a little bit, the league back then was the SEABL.
That's right.
Australian Basketball League.
That's right. Yes.
I'm just going with Brad, Bruce. If I've got facts wrong, I'm blaming
Brad.
No,
that's okay. That's okay.
Don't worry though, Buffy. If he gets it right, he takes the credit. Just do it.
No, we're going back a little while, and even to add to that, they play with the red, white, and blue basketball.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those days there, Eric and I had a good, you know, nice, good combination of playing on the court. Really enjoyed it. The opportunity on Fridays came about because he told me straight away. He said, "You need to make sure you go to Melbourne on Fridays because all the brothers get together at Albert Park and play."
Right.
This is back before the Melbourne Sports MSAC was built. Yeah. He couldn't go majority of the time because he was a family man. So I ended up going on Fridays and playing pickup ball at Albert Park. You had a lot of the imports from the NBL and other imports from the SEABL playing as well. You even had Lindsay down there playing with Andrew. And there was numerous times where I got frustrated seeing Lindsay so wide open, and he would just bury the jumper. And everyone out of respect would not really guard him because he was, you know, he was a basketball guy. And I'm new, and I'm thinking, well, get up on that guy, man. He's a scorer. No, I don't care how old he is. Get up on him. So that was just competitiveness in me. And so having talked to some of the NBL guys on those Fridays and see where their skill set level was and compared to myself to them, I thought, okay, I could play at this level here.
Yep.
Then it was just a matter of trying to, get that contact to you know, to join the NBL team. Fortunately for me, one of my other college teammates, Vince Hinchin, was playing for Ngata Wanga Inspectors.
Yes.
They had just come back from New Zealand at a preseason tournament, I think it was in New Zealand. Dean Utoff, who was the import at that time, didn't have a good little tournament over there. And Barry Barnes, who was a head coach, you know, he had the shits. So he came back from the tournament not happy with Dean Utoff, and they made the decision of letting him go, and they were looking for another import. Vince Hinchin, who was on the team at the time, told Barry Bonds about me. I think they looked up my stat for Siebel, which was, you know, I'm pretty happy with him. They had 40-20, and that was big at that time.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing with no jump shot.
Yeah, exactly. But, that's so, man setting screens.
Yeah, and so that's that's how that started. We ended up signing a deal. Now, this was when I played with Ngata Wanga Inspectors, I had just finished my second year in Norway. And that time over there, I thought having that first year in Siebel with the Lakers and then going back to Norway, I thought I got to get back to Australia if I possibly could for a number of reasons. Obviously, the standard of basketball, It was an English-speaking country. Norway was Norwegian. I didn't speak that whatsoever. And, you know, it was an opportunity for me to kind of still have that pathway in my mind of making the NBA. And I thought the NBL would be a good place to go down that part of my journey at that time.
At what point, Bruce, do you sort of decide – this is the life I want now. I'm going to stay in the NBL. I'm going to stay in this country. How does that happen? And that, because at that moment, you obviously also have to let go of the NBA dream. So it's a bit melancholy. So how does that come about? Where did that happen?
So it kind of started before, probably around about 90, 91, because I wasn't getting any bites from the NBA. I got you know, some CBA offers, which is your G League now. I got some CBA offers, but back then they're only paying like $5,000-$10,000 per season. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I make, you know, more money in Australia than that. And also the lifestyle is great. You know, it's just a nice environment for me. So 91, I started thinking along those lines. You know, my skill set was improving to the point where I thought I can compete with those guys in the NBA, but not really getting serious bites kind of started making me think that, okay, I got to start making a decision here. Am I going to keep trying to, you know, spend years getting back to the NBA, or should I try to submit myself in the NBL? Because my years up to that point in the NBL was some pretty good years. I enjoyed it. I had good teammates, the Australian culture. I embraced. They embraced me. I loved the environment. And then there was a little bit of a hurdle in 91. When I say that is we had the merger between the Westside Saints and the Eastside Spectres.
Yep.
Because that particular year, we got to the grand final, ended up losing to Perth. You know, that Red Army, that culture from Perth started way back then that we know about today.
Yep,
still going.
But that left a taste in my mouth, having gotten so close. And then at the same time, I had to think about, okay, it was a turning point in my career. What am I going to do now? Do I go back to the States to try to pursue NBA to potentially ruin what I've already built up here in Australia? So I made the decision then of I'm not gonna head back to think about America, think about the NBA. If it happens, it happens. Right now, I need to pave my way even further within the NBL. And at the off season of 91, I ended up signing a 3-year deal with the Southeast Melbourne Magic, which was a team that ended up merging. from West Side and East Side.
Yep.
So that really was the point, the time then, I should say.
So, Bruce, you went on to play some great games at the Magic, winning a championship. You then came to the Kings, the Razorbacks. You played with some amazing people, and I've got two questions for you. I'd love to know, what was the greatest team you played in? Because you played for a number of years with different players. And also, who was the best teammate that you had? And I don't mean personality, I meant player. Like, you played with amazing.
So he's setting you up to the best teammate has to be Brand, okay? Just let you know in advance.
I look at players, you know, you had Rob Rose, you had John Dorge, you had Ronaldson, then you go to the Kings, and there was players like, I'm just curious to know, you had some amazing teammates.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. The best team, and I don't say this because we won a championship. I say this because we were like brothers during that year, because it was the year that we merged. We had the import at the start of the season was myself and Milton Newton.
Oh, that's right.
Milton Newton was the import. He could flat out play. Unfortunately for Milt, he played, he competed in a 3-on-3 dunk competition in Adelaide back in the Reebok days. And what happened, he ended up being injured during the 3-on-3 dunk competition. He never recovered. 6 games into the season, we were actually 5-1. 5-1, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Brian called us in and said, I got to make a decision. I got to let Milt know. And straight away, we was like, why? We're 5-1. We're doing well. But knowing Brian is about, if you can't give me all of what I expect of you, and Brian never expected everyone to play at 100%. He knew individually you had your own levels. He knew that Newton was a high caliber player, but he also knew that because of the injury, Newton wouldn't be able to withstand the hardest daily practice, sometimes 2 days, weight room, individuals, heel running. All that. He knew that Newt wouldn't be able to last the season. Yeah. He knew that he would break down. He thought, I can't have that because we got so close last year. We're on the road now. I need to make a decision. So he ended up bringing in Rob Rose.
Yeah.
We all know about Rob. Rob just fitted into that position so smoothly. And to me, that was a combination of the type of person he is and his drive and competitiveness. At the same time, the group of guys on the team, that embraced everything that Brian said. We didn't even hesitate after 5 seconds of listening to the decision that he made or the intensity of the practice that he wanted us to play at. And we became really, really close to where we felt we had each other's back.
Yeah.
We ended up going into games we thought with psychological pinpoint advantage.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And so that right there really, really stuck in my mind, and it just continued on for the rest of the year.
Yeah, as I recall, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Darren Perry get injured just before the grand final series? I think Scott Ninnis and Rob Rose had to kind of, and Darren Lucas all had to sort of share the point guard. So it didn't actually go smoothly either. But everyone was able to sort of step up, and then there you are shaking David Stern's hand and giving him some advice on how to run the NBA.
so DP he did his Achilles.
Yeah.
And straight away, you know, your natural reaction is, oh shit, this was in the series versus Melbourne Tigers. And, all the cross-town rivalry games, it was always a psychological thing. And so straight away, we thought that Melbourne might think that they have a psychological advantage over this now that we've lost our starting point guard. But because Scotty Nennis, every time Scotty Nennis prior to the injury came off the bench, he just gave us that spark that we just didn't miss a beat when Darren Perry was off, subbed out. And same thing happened when Darren Perry got injured. Scotty came in. Rob took up some slack. Darren Lucas took up some slack. Andrew Parkinson, they all played their role in that guard position to make up for what we were losing with Darren Perry being out. And we end up losing the second game to the Tigers. So it was a tie 1-1. But in the third game, we obviously really clicked, got things going. And end up being a fantastic series between the two teams there.
Now, Bruce, it would be remiss of us to have you on the program, and knowing that you're a parent, not mention one of your kids. So I'd like to ask, what's Cairo up to at the moment?
So Cairo, she's living in New York. She's over there modeling. Something that she's always wanted to do, and she went over there 2 years ago now, and been doing extremely well, keeping busy. Have been in the last two New York Fashion Week modeling shows, so pretty proud of her,
yeah,
and pretty mentally strong for her to make that step, and as a father of a daughter. When she originally told me she was going to move to New York, my natural reaction was, "No, you're not moving to the Big Apple."
Yeah. Oh wow! Yeah,
not by yourself. I was here at the time running my business, and I said to her, "No, you can't do that. It's too dangerous for a beautiful girl like you to walk over there and get amongst those streets and everyone to chat to you. They hear your accent." And I said to her, "No way." But then I realized after speaking to her mother that, what we have done to prepare her for life, this is her journey.
Yes.
And that we can't, we can't hold her back. Yeah. No. It would hurt me to have said no. And then, a couple of years down the track, feel the disappointment still in her of not pursuing something that she was passionate about. Luckily,
yeah,
she's doing this extremely well.
Bruce, tell the real reason. She was worried to bring over one of her boyfriends and dad opened the door. Our Hollywood stairmate. She was worried.
dad in shorts with a chainsaw in his hand saying, "Welcome, boy."
Yeah,
come in here. Let me tell you how the night's going to go. Listen, of course, we've got to ask also about Jonah. What a career. Yeah. What's he up to now?
So Jonah has been running his cryptocurrency business. He's, particularly the last, I'd say probably a year and a half, ever since he was waived from the Sixers. He really have dived into that. He's got a team of guys who work with him with his cryptocurrency that he is growing. And he's also setting it up for NBA guys, NFL guys, baseball guys to join in with his athlete's blockchain project. And so that's
I was going to ask one more thing. I know we speak a lot. Give me like in a minute or less, because I know it's really hard. Yeah. What would you be thinking now and saying to Ben Simmons and what's going on in Philly?
Everyone asks me that question all the time. I'll say this. I'll say two things about Ben Simmons' situation. There's two sides to the story, and I need everybody to really understand that. There's two sides to the story. The NBA is a business, but bear in mind, there's two sides to the story. Last point I'll make about that too, though, is we all saw We all saw Ben not take the shot. Unfortunately, that's the last thing on everybody's mind. But what I'll put to you guys here and everyone that might be listening, that particular possession did not lose them that series. It's probably, we can say that, yeah, well, he could have taken a shot, granted. That possession did not lose them the series. The 76ers, with the talent on that team, shouldn't have been in that position. It should not have been that the series shouldn't have gone that far.
Yeah.
Too much talent on that team.
Yep.
Great point.
Yeah, he just became the scapegoat. Yeah, he just became.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you. I think it's ridiculous what's going on. He's a bloody all-star, two-time all-star, and, you know, all-NBA first team. But anyway, we'll move on, mate. It's that time of the pod. We'd love to talk more, but we're now going to throw some names at you, and we want just, like, you know, one word, one sentence, just what comes to mind when you talk about those. And I'm going to start it off, and I'm going to go, your great mate, David Stern.
I'd say icing on the cake. Okay. I know it's more than one word. What I mean by icing on the cake is winning the championship and having the trophy handed to me by him was icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, one Brad. Thanks very much. mine are a little more serious. I'm asking you about what it was like playing with Darren Lucas.
Fun. Absolute fun. He was a joy. You know what, Bobby and Brad, I have been lucky enough to play throughout my career with great point guards. Great on the court, great off the court. And that's been probably something in my career that I cherish because of their role as a point guard and their role to help me play my best out there.
Yeah, nice. I'll go again. The man we always talk about him, Gorge.
Gorge. We both know Gorge. We got stories, but a guy that's passionate, a guy that wants the best for everybody, a guy that's going to challenge you.
Nice.
And if you stand up to the challenge, you're going to walk away not only a better player, a better person.
Okay. Robert Rose.
A fierce competitor. No matter what team he played for, he played the same way.
Yep.
This one's a bit out of left field. Someone that's been in actually a bit of a podcast, in a Netflix series very recently, Isaac Burton.
Probably one of the most gifted players I've played with, who should have been in the NBA.
All right, my last one is a man who's in the news a little bit at the moment and former teammate Andrew Parkinson.
My heart feels for him because of the circumstances and because of his sheer love for the game and how he quietly was probably a character who, without realizing, was part of the glue to the team back in the Magic. He was the one started the pack.
Right.
And that's where we were that particular year, the pack. And yeah, my heart goes out to him every day.
Yeah, our thoughts and prayers. What a great guy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Bruce, mate, thank you so much. There's so much more we can speak about, but we do have time restraints, mate. Can't thank you enough for coming on. As I said before, you're one of the best basketballers Australia's ever produced, but you're a better bloke off it. So thank you so much for coming on. We can't thank you enough.
No problem, guys. Anytime. Keep doing what you guys are doing. Enjoy listening to it each week. Other players, being interviewed, hear you guys your comments on players, on the league, and playing your part in growing basketball. Body, you've been an integral part of basketball for many, many years, and your insights, it's very informative. And the book, I'm sure the book is going to have some stories in it.
Yep.
And what we call real talk in it. And looking forward to getting a copy of that and reading it, and having a time to take me down memory lane, because I'm sure there's plenty of Adelaide 36ers, pages in it to where, memories for me.
Yeah, well, it's a good coffee table book, especially if one of the legs, of the coffee table is about an inch short, it'd be perfect. Just slide it in under there, it'd be well balanced. But thanks for that, Bruce. I appreciate that. Thank you, mate.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Well, that was great, buddy. I enjoyed that. I've been wanting to have Bruce on, and so had you, for a long time, and it was great to be able to pick his brain. What a career, eh?
Yeah. And we didn't actually really touch on the fact that 17 years is a fair effort, isn't it, to play at top level. It's a really good effort, especially when you think also that he was playing in the Seawolves to begin with. It was excellent. I liked what he had to say about Ben Simmons. I know you want to address that a bit.
Yeah, look, I'm such a believer of it. And look, maybe I'm a bit naive and stuff, but I just can't believe how Philly are handling this. You've got a player that he's been phenomenal for them.
Like, yes.
Can he shoot the ball well? Can he do this well? I mean, the guy is a two-time All-Star. He was all NBL first team. And all I see is that shot that he should have dunked it or something like that. Yeah. And I call what Bruce is saying, like, really? Is that what we are basing this whole career? Mate, I've watched that Philly team a lot. And, of course, when Jonah was there, I even watched it more intriguingly. But still, mate, he's phenomenal for that team. If anyone thinks that he's to blame, mate, when he goes out of that team, like, they had, like, Jimmy Buckets there. They've got, like, he wasn't there last year again. I just can't believe. And now this nonsense, now that he's been suspended for one game. Again, I'm not behind the scenes, but, mate, you tell me how many players have not been yelled at by a coach or yelled at the coach saying, this is what I want done and this is what I want done. Did they get suspended for a game?
No, look, I think to reduce his whole career down to that one play, which is what's essentially happening, it is ridiculous. And it strikes me as social media has a bit to answer for too, because if you go back, one of the greatest players of all time, even Bruce mentioned him, was a Philadelphia 76er, Dr. J, Julius Erving. Now, if you really examine and break down Dr. J's game, his jump shot wasn't great. It was not well. When he was taking it, you were kind of like, fingers crossed, okay, that one's down. But he would have got flayed on social media.
Yeah.
And Irvin Johnson, have you seen his shooting technique from range? He worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, but it was anything but copybook. It was not brilliant. When you picture Irvin Magic Johnson, what you have in your mind is a guy driving down the middle of the keyway, making some flashy pass this way, that way, to a Byron Scott.
Or that little James hook shot to win it at the Garden.
Yes, seeing those. You are not seeing jump shots or three-point shots anywhere in his highlight package. So to reduce Ben's game to the fact that, he can't shoot the shot, well, he brings a lot of other stuff to the game, and we're just hypercritical now.
I'm flabbergasted. I just cannot believe he got thrown completely under a bus after that game.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And now they're coming out and going, oh, we want you back, Ben. We love you, please. And look, again, maybe I'm naive. I played Simo. He's an Aussie, Ben, and I want to protect Owls, if you call it. Feel he's one of our. I just think it's ridiculous. I just cannot understand how a guy can be that good and overnight now he's, in theory, the most hated in Philly the way they're making it out. It's just ridiculous. And it's not going to work. He's got to leave.
Obviously, his return to that program was on advice. Probably they're saying, you need to be in, if we're going to get you traded, people need to see that you're on a training track, that you're working out, that you're doing something to keep your stock up. But obviously, once he's walked back into that environment, he has a certain feeling there that it's toxic for him now. And honestly, his emotions probably have got the better of him. And like, he's walked in, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, but I don't want to be here. I just don't want to be here. And that, ended up with Doc Rivers quote, throwing him out of practice, unquote. Basically, he just said, come into the drill. No, I want you in the drill. No, all right, go home. So, like, that kind of exchange is not even – it's not even a volatile exchange, the way it's sort of being portrayed. Well, Ben, as the
Ben doesn't come across as that volatile guy. You know, it'll just be like, that's not what I want. You know what I mean? So I just think it's terrible. But, you know, we don't talk a lot of NBA, I know, but I want to say, how good does Patty Mills look in his new San Antonio uniform at Brooklyn?
Yeah, he didn't look much different, but bang, 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 seven times.
And don't you love it? Don't you love the commentary? Oh, there's that Aussie. There's that Aussie hitting another three. I love it.
I
love it
when they try to say good day.
Yeah, I love it. Right. Geez, my heart goes out to Dante Exum. That bloke cannot take a break, can he?
No. Look, I would love to see him in the NBL with the Phoenix, which he's a part owner of that club. I would love to see him in the NBL, but not
he'd have
yet.
To sell that. He'd have to sell that ownership, wouldn't he? Yeah.
But I don't want to see him in the NBL yet. He's got an NBA career. Someone's got to see it. I mean, do they watch the Olympics? Do they watch how he grew during the course of it? And by the time we won the medal, he was one of our best players. So I don't know. I'm really disappointed that Houston didn't persist there. And like I said, I'd like to see him playing for Southeast Melbourne eventually. But not right now. I want to see him back in the NBA, to be honest.
Mate, couldn't agree more. Thank you. What a great week. Really enjoyed that. Keep a lookout, guys. The season's not far away. We're really looking forward. I want to thank Burger Boss, obviously our great sponsors. Also want to thank Piranha Media for everything they do, Boddy. Last words to you, mate, and have a great week.
Yeah, have a good week, and thanks for tuning in, folks. Ciao.
Can I just say, though, I want to finish it on this. Get
last words. You said last words to me. Jeez.
No, I just realized get Botti's book. I love it.
You know, when Bruce was talking about scrimmaging on a Friday at Albert Park, you know, that's been going on for 50, 60 years. In the 60s, I walked in there as a kid and they were on a Friday afternoon and sat down and watched the most amazing scrimmage going on. All these import players, Lindsay Gaze, Ken Cole, they were just going at it. It was phenomenal. It was just a real different time in basketball. And the fact that it's still going is great.
It's not like that nowadays, is it? Like, I remember back when I was playing and I'd go to Melbourne and I'd be invited to those scrimmages. Mate, they were as good. They were better than playing NBL games. It was just flat out playing. Oh, I miss those days.
No referees. It was just everyone calling the fouls or not. And if they didn't call the foul, they took an elbow next time. Yeah, it was great. But we've lost a lot of that. We lost a lot of tournaments. We've lost a lot of things that have made basketball great. And certainly in our era, I'm sorry for the kids today.
You know what it is? Money.
Yeah, and a bit of a shame.